Hello and welcome to the Green Bay Outdoors podcast. My name's Kyle.
I'm AJ.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Caleb.
Yeah, hey, hey, just right in like he'd done it before.
That's right.
We're joined by Caleb of the Gasoline Gypsies, which if you've watched the Green Bay Outdoors TV show on the History Channel, then you're aware that all that good music that you guys write me in and ask about comes from this guy's mind right here. And one song in particular that did pretty good, I like to say that I was part of the production process of it because I forced the narrative.
You were. You definitely were.
The song Gravel, yeah, yeah. Like everyone always wants to put themselves as a producer on our content. That, yeah. We run into that. Like everyone in the business that's like, hey, we'd like to help you guys with this and that. Do you mind putting us as a producer in the credits? Oh, yeah. And Ryan's always like, eh. Yeah. No chance.
Here's an idea that will never go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No, thank you. But the song Gravel Roads, which was in our 10,000 Islands episode, and Andy was cutting some reels and shorts on that episode yesterday that were just epic. And it took me back to there and going to the 10,000 Islands.
Oh,
what
so River, dude.
What
so
a
fun.
National park. What a national park. It's made up of, get this, 10,000 islands.
What do you know?
You really got to zoom in on the maps when you're looking for it. Like, keep going.
Yeah.
You know.
And everything looks the same.
Yep.
I got turned around pretty good while we were there when we separated that one day when you guys went and tried to find a place where we could camp and shot B-roll.
Yeah.
I just went fishing, consequently caught more fish that day than any other day when I was by myself.
Of course.
I found a spot where I was just getting them. It was awesome.
What were you catching?
That was the problem.
Oh, yeah.
King
whitefish or something?
Great memory. I think it was a type of kingfish.
Kingfish, yeah.
But it was a type of kingfish, and I had never – I don't know anything about the ocean fish. So I get this fish, and I pull it up, and it looks exactly like a redfish. And I'm like, well, I got to let that go because it's not big enough because I looked at the redfish charts and stuff. But then I'm like, he's got this little bulbous thing underneath his chin.
It's almost like a whisker.
Yeah. And I was like, nah, maybe this one's got a growth. 10 minutes later, get another one. And I was like, ah. And I got no self-service where we're at because we're in 10,000 islands. And I bring it up and I'm like, it's like the same size. Then I got a good one and it was almost to keep a redfish size, but it wasn't quite there. It was like the redfish had to be like 22 inches, and these were all like 18, 19, but good fish. We get home. I look it up. It's a certain kind of kingfish that if you can find him, you'll find a school. You'll get a bunch of them, and if it's the greatest fish fry fish there ever was, and you can keep a ton of them.
Don't ever get rid of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Stupid if you do.
They go, if you live your life and get a chance to get on a school of these, you're doing something. That's about right.
That was a kick in the nuts.
Yeah, it was. Both nuts. Right up the middle. So the where they like go inside kind of like when it kicks hard.
I do find myself looking back on those episodes when we find clips because we don't really go back to them very often.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're reminded how good the day was.
Yeah.
And then because we spent so much time down there with Avi and all that whole clan. And that day where we got the jet ski, at the end of it, you and I were like, that was one of the best days I've ever
of my
had.
My life. Yeah. Yeah. You know? We went on that tour, and then we were like ripping through the 10,000 islands. We're with a guy that knew where everything was, so the whole thing's built up seashells and coral and everything like that. That like there's rocks everywhere into the water, and as the tide's coming down, or even when it's up, you could run into something at any time and just ruin everything and just tear yourself open, and the sea dew. And
he's like, follow directly
with
me.
That's right.
Do not go out of the line I'm in. Guy's going 55, 60 miles an hour, zigzagging.
Blindfolded, one arm.
He was standing backwards on his Sea-Doo, filming us from his phone. He'd looking back and forth, filming us
going
backwards.
Going 60.
Yeah, the speed was nuts.
When you're going 60 on a Sea-Doo, it feels like 100 on a car.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, is this safe?
Yeah, and he's like, do not go out of the line I'm in. And you're looking, and you'll look like, it's from me to you away, I'll look at the water. And in it, I'm seeing, like, rocks and stuff that would just destroy me. And you're just, like, zipping, going 60.
You have to stay on plane.
But that was a great day.
That was one of my favorite episodes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like the I get really into the history of places and stuff, and I feel like you touched on that a little more than the other ones. That was great.
No one talks about that area ever.
No.
I had no idea it was even a thing.
People in Florida don't know it's a thing.
Yeah, they don't.
I bet.
They don't.
You know, and the people that work there, that, like, at the boat launches don't know about it. Like, we're trying to DNR people, and we're like, hey, we want to get overnight parking. There's no overnight parking on this. It was like an island to get, like, a boat launch that was on an island.
Yep.
And we want to go out there and see everything. They go, nobody stays the night out there.
Never.
And we're like, what? Yeah, they do. We watched YouTube. Like, yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And we had ridden out a good ways the day prior, just to check it out, see what we were dealing with, and we saw people out there
camping. It's like, so it's like we couldn't find a person that knew what was going on even around the area. But yeah, it was pretty incredible. You gotta look at the episodes. You know, you watched them all. What were your thoughts on, like, your favorites, or like which one did you think stunk?
Yeah, I want to know what your least favorite was.
Yeah, start there.
I honestly didn't have a least favorite.
No one has a favorite kid.
Maybe I did at the time. Touché. Full disclosure, I did watch them all. It was right before you and I went hunting. I kind of binged them all. That was a little while ago. But I think the alligator episode was definitely one of my favorites. And I told you a little bit about that because that is something that, you know, most of the other episodes, I've obviously been fishing a whole bunch and hunting a whole bunch. That was a whole new, different, just way of doing anything. And
yeah.
That was cool to me, seeing I'd never watched any videos or anything like that about gator hunting. So
yeah, they treat them like big fish.
Yeah, that was, and then finding out the age of them and stuff like that, that was all super. That's the sort of thing I really get into, the finer details, and that was, you guys did a good job of that. And
thank you.
And then there's a little bit of action in there with you swimming across the river, and
you don't have to do another take. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah,
that one was. We wanted more camera angles. I specifically wanted more camera angles.
Yeah.
So I ended up having to do it twice, but it took some. Dude, it was scary. Like,
yeah,
half,
I bet it was.
It was always like I'm just jumping in water. I'm fine, and then
can't see anything.
You know, that's the thing.
We're looking up the river. There's an alligator sticking its head up.
Yeah.
in the
river.
The
weird thing too is all the snakes.
Yeah, you got bigger cojones than me. I do a lot of crazy stuff when I'm out hunting and fishing. I don't know if I would swim across that water, man.
Just, well, it's like Michigan's a pretty non-lethal state.
Yeah.
I was so thirsty, too. Dude, we forgot water that day.
I was
dying. We got out there, and we didn't have any water.
It's like 90 degrees.
90 degrees for like 8 hours, and we didn't have any water or food, and we didn't eat breakfast that day.
Surprised you don't carry around one of those little Nalgene straws with you, whatever they're called.
I've heard those don't work.
Yeah,
I think it's gimmicky. When we hiked Isle Royale, we didn't pack any water because it was a five-day hike from one end of the island to the other. We used them the whole time.
Really?
Yeah, and I had nothing but, I mean, that.
No,
like,
gonorrhea or nothing?
No, nothing like that. I hope not.
I always get gonorrhea from those straws. Sorry.
You're good. Yeah, but they come with like little bags, you know, and you just find a creek and fill up the bag, and then you kind of roll it out. You screw the straw in and roll it out into it, and that's all I drank for 4 or 5 days, something like that.
The waters, I've used a life straw in the mountains in Colorado when I was elk hunting there years ago. Jeez, like 8 years ago now.
Long time.
And, I was like, I don't know what I expected, but the water tasted like about like you'd think a river water would taste. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, did something happen when I drank it through this? You got to suck hard to like
hard.
Pull it
you
through.
Do.
That.
Oh, you do?
Those bags. Very. That's what those bags were so cool, because you fill up the bag and then the straw screws into it and you just, you know, coil up the bag and it
helps.
Pushes it out. Because I tried, when I first got it, I went right to Lake Huron and tried it out before I went, so I knew it wasn't.
When I saw Ryan doing it, though, he was just doing it so easy, like it was nothing. Like it was just no big deal for him.
Yeah.
It was like, I struggle more with it.
I suck well.
I
wasn't going to go there.
The first time I used it, I don't know how old I was. I thought it's just a cool thing, so I'm going to use it, even though I didn't really need to. It was on that trip to Canada where my dad brought me mosquito net to sleep with for himself, but not for me.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I had to sleep on the rock with mosquitoes.
I can't believe that.
The mosquito like wristband things, I tied them around my neck so they'd stay away from my face. It was the worst.
Lucky you got a little neck.
Yeah. So I used a straw in like on a puddle on the rocks, and it was full of nasty garbage, and it tasted fine. My dad was like a little apprehensive because we're in the middle of nowhere. He's like, if you get sick, this is gonna suck.
Yeah.
Like, we're a long ways from anything.
Yikes.
Right. So, but I guess I lived.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why, like I said, I wanted to give mine a try in the lake, and it worked out great. And then that whole trip, that's all we used. We didn't take any water or anything with us. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's some serious trust.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of what you had to do. I mean, we were backpacking the whole time, just walking from one end to the other, and it was definitely.
How is the lake water taste?
It tasted fine. I don't know what brand you had when you were tasting the river water, but I didn't have any. There was no bad taste, nothing like that.
That glacier water in Alaska was pretty good. I don't know how safe it was, but it was good.
He was just drinking it. Yeah.
We're like, hey, man.
Yeah, it was no sediment, clear as can be.
Well, I mean, it did have sediment. That's why it was blue.
Well, yeah, but it was rocky sediment. That was minerals, idiot.
For taste.
It's still minerals for taste.
The sediment isn't what kills you.
What was fair. What was the flavor?
Close to like Liquid Death, where it's like crisp and clear.
Yeah, no curse though.
Yeah, I welcome it.
Yeah.
That's our buddy Steve, the bass player in the band. He, we were canoeing one time, and his beer kept falling into the bottom of his canoe, and he was drinking it anyway. You know, on the drive home, I think we had to stop about 15 times.
Oh, really?
Go to the doctor 2 days later, and he drank a little bit of beaver poop, and gave him dysentery.
Dysentery,
like he was like deathly sick after 2 days.
Jeez, him and those beavers.
Where your body dries up and you die. Yikes.
Yeah,
like him and those beavers
couldn't stop hitting the bathroom.
Wow,
and it was wild.
Really?
Yeah, it was wild.
Maybe that's what we had in South Dakota.
Dysentery. Where do you think we got it from?
There's still mystery.
I clean
the mystery dysentery.
It was the Arby's, right?
That's Jeffrey cleaning those pheasants. Yeah. Oh, that was when he was face down in the Arby's parking lot.
Yeah,
I think
he
I
sent me that picture.
Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. We were just talking that time.
Yeah.
Circling back real quick because I didn't do a very good job of this. Gravel Roads is a song that we used in that 10,000 Islands episode. And at the time, you guys were, you had a demo of it, and I loved it. And I was like, hey, I want to use this. And you said, hey, stop until I make it what I want it to
it's
be.
It's not color corrected.
Yeah, it's pretty much that.
So that's going to be your new single.
Yeah, so we went back into the studio, and we used that track because it was close to being done. But
you've played it live, though, several times.
Yeah, we played it live for years. I just wanted – we redid the guitar parts a little bit, nice. Changed up some vocals and stuff like that, and just kind of got it dialed in just a little bit better. So, yeah, we're actually taking the old one down off of Spotify, and April 24th it'll be dropped, and that's going to be the name of our four-song EP that's coming out in Gravel Roads.
Sweet.
Nice.
Yeah.
You said you're taking the other one off of Spotify?
Yeah, you don't want two of the same track on there, basically. It gets in the way of numbers and stuff like that.
Do you lose numbers then?
A little bit, but we kind of weighed the options, and it's worth it to get the better version out there. Yeah,
we made those
artistically,
decisions before.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. So we have that one. It'll be that Broken Arrow, Mud in the Water with the full band version of that one, and then Calling Me Home. I think Jack sent you those other tracks.
Yeah, you texted me the other day some too.
Yeah.
When you're redoing the tracks, is the mix different? Is it more fuller? Is it more instruments, more layers?
Yeah, so that one we sent you guys wasn't even mastered, which is kind of like the final touches after you mix everything out in the studio. But yeah, like I said, I redid the guitar tracks. The original take was just a little bit sloppier than I liked. And then the vocal breakdown there in the middle with the big vocal harmonies. We were having a hard time dialing that in because we were so used to playing it live. And the tempo changes so much when we do it live, it slows way down. And we tried to do it straight to a click track before with the version we sent you guys. So that vocal breakdown, we slowed it down
it
a little bit. Yeah, and then obviously when you slow something down, we had to go through and redo the harmonies and stuff like that.
Sweet.
So, yep.
Just more polished.
Yeah,
better
basically.
Takes.
Yeah, it was just I was literally a better guitar player from the first time I recorded it to the second time. So, yeah, it's one of those things, you know, a little bit.
There you go.
You go into the studio, it's funny how much you figure out how much you're messing up. And songs that you just play live, you know.
How do you like even start a song, like from the idea in your head to Spotify? Like, how does it start?
So when I first start, most of the time when I'm writing a song, it's like one line that pops into my head, like you know, Gravel Roads, Open Highways, I think was the first line that popped in my head, and then I kind of write the song around that.
Okay.
Is typically how it goes. Sometimes, you know, Neil or somebody, our guitar player, will bring a riff, like a guitar riff to the table, and then we write around that. That happens sometimes, too.
Like our theme song.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, that was all Neil.
I get the vibe that Neil's the shredder.
Neil is the shredder, okay. Yeah. And in our previous lineup, I was, you know, lead vocals, songwriter, and the lead guitar player, and it was just, you know, kind of too many hats type thing. So it was really nice picking up Neil and me just kind of chilling out. I'm playing acoustic a lot more now, which is really nice compared to I still love playing the electric, but acoustic was always my thing anyway.
Okay.
So, yeah. It's nice to lay back and let him do some of the
so
heavy
you the,
lifting.
You got the EP coming out. Was there a full length prior to that, or have you guys been multiple releases of like big catalogs?
Yeah, I think we have. We just took our oldest one down, kind of similar to when I was talking to you about your old episodes. You're like, yeah, just don't watch those.
Okay.
Your first ones, you know? That's what our first album was really like. Some
He's
people,
like, I'm going to go back to season one. I go, you sure aren't.
Yeah. Some people weren't happy
don't
about us
it.
Taking it down, but it was another just decision that we made. Felt like it was for the best moving forward. But we have three up right now, including a couple, I think four or five singles, and then we're doing this EP, and we're already started recording the next 4-song EP, and then we're going to slap those together for a full-length vinyl, I think. So,
ooh,
that's super sweet.
Yeah, it's exciting.
180 gram.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you guys are doing all your stuff in-house, right? Like, is Neil, Neil's the one... Last time we were there, Neil was doing working on something.
Yeah, so it's the same studio engineer, and he's had taken on a much larger producer role. Our good friend Lee Hoffman, who I've been working with, and the radio jingles I do, I've done through him. So with these recordings, we're going into the studio with him. We're recording all the demos at the practice space that you guys visited, doing all of our demo stuff there. And any stuff that isn't like a... you know, an actual record that we're putting out, we're recording in-house. And, you know, Neil now just records from home, even with the stuff in the studio. He just sends the tracks over. So we can really kind of cool. do it from different places and don't all have to be there at once.
Okay.
That's nice. Sweet.
Yeah, it's nice. Technology. I know, it's crazy.
That's pretty
cool. Yeah, a lot of bands are just sending their tracks if they live in different parts of the country.
Yep.
Here's my parts.
Yeah, they...
Producer puts them together.
They have this
the mixer.
Software now that you can... there's like zero lag, or it's like a millisecond or 0.5 milliseconds or something. So people, there's bands that are from all over different parts of the country that are practicing together weekly. Oh,
what?
Yeah,
that's
crazy,
man.
Yeah, I was wondering how you guys were able to do those Zoom sessions.
Yeah, so
the
we had some fun with that. The first couple we did.
I'm not gonna lie.
And then, the last one kind of was. And we it's not like we faked it the whole way through. The last one, it was pre-recorded, and we each put a couple phones up, and just to kind of like a nod to us doing it, at the very end, I walked off the camera and walked right back on in a different outfit. So everybody, they thought it was live and then saw, and then the guitar solos came in, and there was me playing two guitars and stuff. It was fun. Wow, we had fun with it towards the end. We had to do something to stay sane and keep the music going. There's so many bands that just fell apart with
during COVID.
Yeah.
Bands and venues.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, when you look at the scope of things too, like with what we do and what you guys do, it just kind of feels like whoever stays the longest and keeps growing will win.
Yep, right? And that's
like
what
you just have to outlast them.
Yep, it was a sad thing. A lot of good friends and bands that fell apart, but kind of leveled the playing field a little bit in a lot of ways too, which wasn't a bad thing for us. We just hunkered down and practiced our butts off for 2 years, you know, and just got a lot better. And then it's kind of like the forest fire thing, you know, sometimes it's got to burn for the new trees to grow. And if you lasted, you were ahead for sure.
100%. Yeah. I see that in a lot of different things for us too, is like in the growth, it took us 6 years before we really got the traction that we needed. And then the last 2 years have been fantastic, yeah. And the growth comes, but most don't go that 6 years without, you know what I mean?
Yep. And that's what they say at, takes 15 years and then it happens overnight or whatever. You know?
Yeah, and then like the Chinese bamboo tree.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where it's like Chinese bamboo tree that you plant the seed, and I believe it's 6 years, but you have to water it and water it and water it for 6 years, and it will not sprout.
Dang.
On the seventh year, it'll sprout, and it'll grow like 15 feet in a matter of a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think we talked about that when we were duck hunting, actually.
Yeah.
I think this conversation came up. Yeah.
I don't remember. Those numbers might be a little off, but the idea is then – did the plant grow in 2 weeks or did it grow in 7 years? And obviously the answer is the long one, because you still had to water it that entire time.
So through Facebook, I've seen that you have a friend with, how do I want to phrase this? Dirk from Boss Shot Shells has a wife, and you guys are friends with her, and she's big into the music scene. Her name is Morgan Engel. Do you actually know her personally, or is it... like through word of mouth, you know her a little bit?
It might be a word of mouth thing. I'm admittedly a lot better with faces than names, so if I saw her, might.
I'll show you a picture.
Why do you have that picture?
It's Facebook. That's
funny. Yeah, she does look familiar. Yeah. Is she a musician herself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jam bandy.
Yeah. What's the name of her band, you know?
Singer-songwriter at The Backup, singer-songwriter at Slim Gypsy Baggage.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she looks really familiar. She's out of Michigan, obviously. Then,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just curious about that, if there was any correlation there.
Not anything direct, but you know how the music industry is. There's a lot of connecting pieces all the time.
That's the same way for us.
Like,
the longer you're in it, the smaller the world gets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like when we talk about AJ and I, when we went to NWTF in Nashville, it's like we knew basically everybody. And it's a huge room, and it just feels like there's only 100 people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You get used to it. You brought us in some gifts.
I did.
Yeah. What? Talk to us about what you got going on here.
So that jar there is what we're calling deer juice now, since my friend on the Facebook called it.
He's
that.
Like, questions. He's like, man, it was a long car ride. Long car ride.
Yeah.
You lost my gain.
Yeah. So that's that's venison bone broth that we make up every year. For about the past 3 years, this is my first time canning it, like I told you guys. Normally I'd freeze it, but it was just taking up too much room in the deep freezer. So
you got a lot of freezer stuff.
Yeah, we decided to take it the next step and can it up. And that's why I think it's been 3 years now I've been making that instead of buying stock from the store. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, most of the time I save all the leg bones, typically, just because they're easier to break down. And
what's the process?
So you broil the bones for about 45 minutes, cover them with, I just do virgin olive oil and salt and just get them so they're brown. And that kind of adds to the color and just adds a little bit of like roasted flavor.
So that's, you just take the whole bone.
Yep.
Put it in the oven.
I paint it with oil and just sprinkle kosher salt on it.
Is there any meat on it at all?
Yeah. So I leave a little bit of meat on and you're kind of supposed to, it just adds a little bit of that extra flavor and like, you know, the little collagen bits and stuff is what's good for it. You'll see when you heat it up, like it has a real good shimmer to it on the top. And that's when, you know, the really good batches will be like jello when you put them in the fridge. It's pretty wild. But yeah, and then we take vegetable scraps. I mean, sometimes I'll buy some vegetables, but a lot of the times it's like the ends of celery, carrots, stuff like that. We keep all that in the freezer. And then after you roast them, you cover them with cold water. It's got to be cold water because it releases that collagen. And then just put all the vegetable scraps, a couple bay leaves, and some peppercorns in there and cook it overnight on the stove.
Dang.
Hmm.
So you don't open up the bone in any way to get to like, the marrow?
So actually, I typically do at least a couple of them. I'll just take a Sawzall and cut them in half most of the time.
And where in the process? Before you do the roasting?
Yes. Yep. So you cut them in half and roast
them. And you get the marrow out?
Yeah. So, and then a lot of that marrow will come out, and that's what adds to the shimmer. And like I said, if you cut them all in half and do it for a long time, it'll be like jello.
Is it in a big pot on the stovetop or actually in the oven?
So you put a pot on the stovetop after you roast them in the oven.
Okay.
And that's another reason you cut them down, because, I mean, some of those leg bones on a big deer are too long to fit.
So I guess, like, explain... Okay, you put it in the oven, you're seeing a shimmer, it's looking good, you pull it out, what goes into the pot besides those scraps and stuff that you talked about?
So it's just vegetables, water, and the bones, that's it. And you just cook it down so it's like barely simmering.
So the whole bone's
simmering.
Going then?
Yep,
okay.
Yep. So you roast them, put all the bones in the pot, cover that with cold water, and then we bring it to a boil because some like weird stuff sometimes comes up on the top, like that thick foam. Scoop that foam off, put the veggies in, cover it, and put it on simmer, and usually just leave it overnight.
Okay.
And then you strain it through a cheesecloth and a strainer, and then put it in the fridge to cool, and then there'll be a thick layer of fat on the top. Hmm. And you can usually just get, like, I put a spatula in there, and, like, half of it will come up at a time, and get that fat off of there, because that's the tallow that people say, like, deer fat's no good, because... It'll leave that nasty film on the top
like
of your mouth.
Yeah, it's like a waxy.
Yep, and you'll see, it's a little bit of it's okay. You'll see little tiny, few little like pebble-looking things floating around on the top. That's fine, as long as it's not the whole bunch.
Yeah.
So you get that fat off, and then you can it like that or freeze it or however you do it.
What can I expect flavor-wise?
It's good. It's just like any beef stock, anything like that you'd buy from the store. There's no, people say that venison bone marrow is gross. I'll eat that shit right out of the bone when I'm doing it. It's good.
That's awesome.
Really, really good. Yeah.
How many bones was that?
So we did I did a huge pot, and I think I had 8 full-size jars like that and 5 or 6 of the little, I think they're quarts.
Oh, dang.
Yep, so you get a decent amount out of it. And if you can it, like I said, that'll be good for a couple years in the
That
in
is cupboard. Awesome. Well, what was the thing you did at your house that stunk up the whole... Your mom got
boiled the skull.
Yeah.
Yeah, I already knew what it was going to be.
It was my dad, actually.
Yeah.
My dad did it. Ruined the house.
Yeah. He did it inside?
My mom was pissed.
Oh, that's
funny.
Bad.
Years ago.
This smells like amazing. I'm like stoked when I wake up and I smell that.
Really?
Yeah, there's no... It's so funny. It's just another one of those things people get in their heads that it tastes awful. And that is like the best broth I've ever. There's a reason I keep doing it. You know, if it tasted bad, I wouldn't have done it a second time, you know?
Yeah, a lot of nutrients in it, too.
And we do the same thing with turkeys. So we're all out of turkey broth. I'm pretty excited to get one or two of those this year. And you throw the heart and the liver and stuff in there with the turkey broth. I put the feet in there last year actually too.
How was that?
Amazing.
That's awesome.
My girlfriend was grossed out. My fiance now, I should say, was grossed out when I pulled those feet out of there. But
yeah, they look like little dinosaur feet.
Yeah, yeah. It was. I'm almost more excited about the turkey broth than the turkey itself.
Wow.
It's great. Wait till you try it, man. It's oh yeah. Yeah. I gave him a good scrub down before.
I bet, dude.
Those little claws, seeing those things floating around your food.
It was a little gross.
It's like a witch's brew.
Yeah.
You ever seen the movie Pain and Gain, anyone here? I know you haven't. You don't watch anything. Yeah, it just reminded me.
I actually have, believe it or not.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. We've all seen it.
Yeah, where he's like outside and the rock's cooking the hands and stuff. Yeah. He's like, oh, it was too smoky inside. It's so funny.
Yeah, yep.
Watch yourself. You'll burn yourself.
The Greenway Outdoors is brought to you by Ram Trucks, built to serve. Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, your adventure starts here. Savage Arms, better come standard. Nosler Ammunition, world's finest bullets, ammunition, and brass. Boss Shot Shells, superior made and American made. Carlson's Choke Tubes, the only choke tube we've ever purchased. Onyx Hunt, know where you stand.
If you want to be here, it all starts here. At Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, we have the widest selection of the quality brands you love to get you outdoors. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, our friendly, knowledgeable outfitters will help you find the right products for your next trip. Shop with confidence with our low price guarantee. Plus, club members save even more on great gear with exclusive member pricing. Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, voted America's best outdoor retailer.
For every purpose, for every path, for every soul, for every season, there's a ram.
Legends aren't born, they're created. Introducing Impulse from Savage, the all-new American-made straight-pull bolt-action rifle. Unmatched innovation, fast reloads. Maximized efficiency. Repeatable accuracy. Welcome to American Straight Pull. Only from Savage.
What about this little...
Yeah, so that's the ghost pipe tincture that we talked about when you guys came the last time. Are you going to try it on camera?
I'll try it.
It's not, I mean, it'll burn a little bit going down.
Tell everyone what it is, though.
Recap what?
Yeah, so.
Did you make it?
Yep, we made this.
Under the tongue.
Yep. Ghost pipe is a plant. I can't think of it.
This will be good.
You shouldn't have done that. You should have just done it.
Off the top of my head.
You think that's enough?
More.
More?
Empty it and then do the thing.
I'll wait till he tries it to explain it the rest of the way.
There you go. Yep. Under the tongue.
Yeah, he's going to be a distraction, I feel.
Just embrace it. And
stick out your tongue. Let me see it.
Top filled drink.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he tried to hide it. Oh, don't you dare. You swallow it.
Linger for a minute, and then
you
swallow
it. The quicker you swallow it, the better you'll be. That good?
All
ghost and no pipe.
The taste isn't bad. It's just that
it's
alcohol.
The burn of the
it looked
alcohol.
Like he got hit with the pipe. Yeah,
nice.
So what is it? How do you
explain
make
to
it?
Us what's
yeah,
going
what's,
on?
And what's happening to him right now?
Well, what he's feeling right now is the 151 that we make it with. Is what he's feeling more than anything else. You don't have to make it with such strong alcohol, but it helps with the process. But it's a plant. It's one of the few plants that doesn't produce its own chlorophyll, so it has a symbiotic relationship with fungus that grows on
chlorophyll. More like borophyll.
You set us up.
So it takes its nutrients from fungus that grows on tree roots. And it's a white plant. I should have brought my water bottle in here. I got a sticker on it with a picture of it, but you can look it up. You can find it. And the Native Americans used it for a long time for all sorts of ailments. Different tribes use it for different things. When you have the flu, stuff like that. But the big thing that it's used for, especially, is anxiety and nerve pain. Those are the two main things. So we started making it just in little batches, and my mom has some pretty severe nerve pain and like knots in her muscles and stuff. And it literally, like, she called me in tears the one day after using it for a couple weeks because it changed her life so much. So that's when I started really looking into it and making bigger batches. And it's actually part of a study through Penn State last fall.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and they sent me a kit with the ice packs, and I did tree measurements and how far away they were from the different kinds of trees and stuff like that, and sent it out. So I'm looking forward to getting those results back. But it's amazing. It really is like a miracle drug.
What's the process of making that?
So literally you just cut them off and put them in a jar, and you don't want to cram them in there, just loosely to the top of the jar, almost to the top, I should say, and then you just pour 151 on it.
What's 151? I don't know.
It's like really strong. It's like the proof of the alcohol. So like
very,
average,
very strong.
Yeah, average alcohol is like a strong one's like 80 proof.
80 proof.
Yeah. Yep. And this would technically be, I think, like, well, 150. Yeah, yeah. 151.
Is that like moonshine?
Proof. Almost. It's okay. Like a hair under moonshine. It's like legal moonshine, I guess.
So that's what he was freaking out about.
Yeah, is the burn. His eyes are watering still. You get used to it after a while. But yeah, and you just let it soak in the jar. It's really wild because the plant is white or almost translucent when you first pick it. Maybe a little.
What would happen if you just ate the plant?
Purple, pink. I did this year, actually. I tried it after watching a video of a guy doing it. It tasted
I got stark naked and ran around the neighborhood.
Yeah, no, nothing like that. It tastes like a radish almost.
Okay.
Yeah, and it like.
I could see that from that guy.
Yeah, it had a little burn to it, honestly, when I ate the plant.
Did you get anything from it, or
no? I just wanted to try it.
Okay, so it's so the effects don't really happen until you pair it with alcohol.
Yeah, so you know, people make tinctures out of mushrooms and stuff like that too, and there's like the terms aren't popping into my head, but there's you know, you can do it with alcohol, and then there's you could do it with water as well, and the water releases certain chemical compounds, and the alcohol releases certain chemical compounds. So this is with the alcohol. You can do it with water. From what I read with the ghost pipe, the water doesn't do much. With like certain mushrooms like red reishi or turkey tails, they'll do a dual. They'll do it with the alcohol and the water and then mix them together for the final product.
Oh, interesting.
Do you feel less anxious?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You going on? Zen.
Yeah, and I've had friends with panic attacks and stuff where really it actually shuts it down. I've seen it happen. So it's one of those things. It's pretty wild, man. It's cool.
And it helps with inflammation?
So not so much inflammation, but nerve pain specifically.
Okay.
Yep. My mom has fibromyalgia, which is a pretty blanket term, honestly, for nerve pain. They don't really know what causes it still. But
I thought it was that stuff in the ceiling.
Shuts
it down. That's asbestos.
Might cause fibromyalgia. Yeah, but, yeah, man. It's amazing. So we have a couple jars left, and I give it away. And, you know, even people... they say who are like really doing bad on like hard, like hallucinogens.
Mm-hmm.
If they're having a bad time, they take some of that and it shuts it down. So ooh. We play a lot of music festivals and stuff. And,
hand that out.
I see a lot of bad trips.
The last one, I had a couple little tiny vials that I handed out to a couple people just like, hey, if you see anybody freaking out or having a bad time, just have them toss
that
back.
In.
Yeah. Yeah.
Takes away the ego death.
Yeah.
My wife was recently diagnosed with lupus, so she has an assortment of different flare-ups, hip pain, elbow, it's all over, headaches, sleepiness, stuff like that.
Diarrhea.
Occasionally. No, not diarrhea yet that I've seen.
She's known for it. She's known for it, yeah.
So I've been barking up this tree for a while now where I'm like, pills aren't necessarily the way to go.
She's a nurse.
Yeah. Mm. So that's the way she's been taught. It's like Western medicine in pill form is the best way to go. And I'm not necessarily as much of a believer in that. So I've kind of been coercing her into the direction of like, hey, let's try to look at some alternative routes. Because these doctors aren't going to help you with your lupus necessarily.
Man, I don't have much faith in the modern medicine industry anyway. There's a lot of good medicines out there, but yeah
they'll tell you
it's a market and they're trying to make money. And that's, my mom was on, I think, 15 to 20 different medications. I think she's down to like 5.
I don't know why it's not working.
Yeah, exactly. And just,
and that's all they were doing with her is just making her hop and skip around from pill to pill. Yeah. Oh, try this one. Okay, well, that has all these side effects, so that doesn't work. So try this one, try this one.
Or they give you a pill for the side effect.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to have to try that.
My fiance takes that, I think, almost daily at this point. And so you can put it in, you don't have to do it that way. That's, I mean, if somebody is having a panic attack or really not doing good, that is the best way to take it. But, I mean, she puts it in her tea at night and stuff. And it's like, it doesn't add any, you know, a couple of droppers of that and some tea is like,
nice.
You won't, I mean, it won't burn going down.
No. We'll try that.
There's one other, so we gift back. This is a.
Oh yeah.
This is a shotgun here.
Good.
This is Caleb's new shotgun. This is a Savage Stevens 560 Field Edition. So the reason why when you talked to me about what shotgun you should get, I pushed this one for a reason. The MSRP on this one's like $499, and at most places you'll get it at $450. You know, if you go to a store, a lot of times they'll have it on sale or something like that. But the MSRP is $500. You cannot get a good semi-automatic shotgun for $500, but no. I wanted to talk about this one specifically, and I wanted you to be shooting it, and you're going to be running Boss shotgun shells through it for your turkey hunt. But it's a semi-auto shotgun. I mean, everything about it is smooth, and I love the way that it shoulders, and I love everything about it. But
yeah,
that's going to be
beautiful.
That's your new shotgun for the next. For the next go round.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is
you were shooting pump before.
Yes, I was. I remember when we went duck hunting, I asked if I should bring my pump. You're like, yeah, we'll set you up. don't you worry about that.
I was like, yeah, don't. Here, I'll give that back to Ryan. But yeah, this is the Stevens 560 Field semi-auto shotgun. Highly recommend it. If you are someone out there looking for, you know, you want to get a semi-auto shotgun and you don't want to spend and break the bank, this is the one to. This is the one to get. $500. It'll last you forever. Super well made. This is real wood.
Yeah, it looks good.
It's real wood. I mean, it's beautiful. So I want to hand that over. But I want to kick off a conversation based on that topic specifically, because we made a post, and we've got a new guy on the team. He's fantastic. His name is Andy. And Andy is going to be the one cutting up all of our short-form content that we're going to be distributing. We're doing like 12, 15 reels a week now. And Andy's super creative. We're a rough crowd as far as bringing somebody new in to work with us. Yeah. So it's like kind of a difficult, you know, skill to have. You just got to be able to hang with us, you know?
And there's a level of trust.
Yeah. Yeah, because we say some stuff. But anyhow, the...
we'll leave it at that.
That said, he came on to handle these shorts. And he's done a really good job. And a few of them have, I don't really know what considered, I wouldn't want to say gone viral, because I don't know what viral entails, because people have different definitions of that. But for instance, this video right here that he made on TikTok has 225,300 views. And it was literally me talking about conservation and hunting and fishing licenses. Something I talk about a lot is 60% of hunting and fishing licenses are sold to white males over the age of 55. And the problem with that is in 10 to 12 years, we are not going to have the funding that we need for our natural resources, our species sustainability efforts, our clean water initiatives, our national parks. All the things that nature benefits from comes from the sale of the hunting and fishing licenses and or nonprofits that are in the industry, such as, you know, Delta Waterfowl, Trout Unlimited, those sorts of things. And to me, it's like this just a pretty blanket, easy thing to understand. And typically when I go speak at a dinner, people are like thanking me for that message. And granted, even with a 250,000 views on that video in a day, it has 8,761 likes, but 2,417 comments, 797 shares. I went through the comments the best that I could because it's draining. You know what I mean? It really is.
Oh, yeah.
And what I expected was what I get at most wild game dinners, and it was not that. I will summarize into two key points that people made. Point number one is there's no land that is worth hunting anymore. Everything's private land, or the state land's overrun with hunters, and it's not even safe, and there's no point, or there's no game. And two was that, and this was by far the highest one, this was probably three-quarters of the responses, was it's too expensive to get into hunting. They can't do it because it's too expensive. And there was a lot of arguments in those 2,400 comments of people on my side coming to my aid or whatever it might be, because some people are really mad at me for saying this. And the third one I guess I should mention is they're like, well, the government doesn't do anything with those fishing licenses anyways. It's all corrupt and it goes nowhere.
Okay.
So the relationship between the DNR and the people is
good. You must know a lot.
Right. The reason why I piggyback off of that shotgun is because what that shotgun costs is insanely low. And a little bit of research, you would have stumbled upon it. $500 is still nothing to shake a stick at, though. It's still an expensive purchase for people. And hunting is can tend to be expensive.
But also, it's like buying...
What hobby isn't?
Buying tools. It's like you buy it once, pay big once.
Buy once, cry once.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like a gun is usually a lifetime item. If you take care of it.
That's the thing. Yeah, guns you pass down.
Yeah.
I mean, like, my first gun was a rifle that was passed down from my grandfather. It was made in 1960. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like...
I just recently learned that they're one of the only things that appreciate in value, too, which I didn't know.
They can. Yeah. They certainly can.
I mean, certain ones, sure.
Yeah.
But, Phil's got some.
That, yeah. All the more reason, though, to buy a... To me, is to buy, like, a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that gun's worth what it's worth all the time.
Yeah.
You know? But I wanted to talk about it a little bit as, like... I could go into it from my line of view, but Caleb, you're relatively, like, you got yourself into hunting. You didn't have parents that taught you to hunt.
Yep.
You didn't have any guidance in hunting. You were a musician, so I know what it's like for being a TV show when we're first starting out. So it's not like we're rich people.
Yeah.
You know? What would you say as far as, like, what were your biggest hurdles with cost of entry, and how did that keep you out, or how did that keep you in, and how did you overcome it?
So that's what I try to tell people too. You don't need the best gear to go out and successfully harvest an animal. I got my first bow, which I used until honestly a couple years ago. And I was lucky. Don't get me wrong. One of my girlfriends when I was a teenager, her dad was really into bow hunting, and they're the ones who kind of got me into just the thought of, and I started with bow. I didn't even start with a gun. But I think I like cleaned out an old pot of soup that he didn't want to deal with, and he gave me one of his old bows.
That sounds like me.
Fair trade.
It was like a 89 High Country, you know. It wasn't a great bow. Shot fast enough, and, you know, of course you have to buy arrows, which you guys know with hunting, that's once you get your bow, that's the most expensive thing, is to get a decent arrow that works well for what you're shooting. But I harvested plenty of deer with that. I probably took, you know, until I got my new one, probably 15 deer with that bow.
Right.
Know? So, and then, you know, once I got into it, I obviously started investing into my hobby, started gun hunting a little bit more because, you know, I knew how healthy venison was for you, you know, and I wanted to kind of make that lifestyle choice and know where my food was coming from. So I bought my 450 and I got a great deal on it. It was under $200. I had decided to invest in a really nice scope so altogether, I think it was maybe a $500 purchase, and I've harvested probably 15 or 20 deer with that gun. And you know, you think about the meat that you get, and I process all my own deer I have since I started. Again, I had a friend who had a processing shop, and he kind of, you know, I'd come help him for a day, and he would cut up my deer for me and show me how to do it. But I mean, the literally hundreds of pounds of meat that I've gotten from those two things. And it, you know, definitely under $1,000, you know. So if you do the math,
it's true.
And, you know, of course, everybody has the argument too, where it's an investment of your time, and time is money. And sure, I don't disagree with that, but I would rather spend my time doing something that I love, like being in the outdoors, which
right.
is something I would have done anyway, whether I was hunting or not. I just have always loved hiking, fishing, you know, all of that stuff. Yeah. I'd rather do that than work an extra 5 hours so I can go buy a steak that I have no idea how that animal was raised or where it came from or what was put into that meat.
That's what you say at the restaurant.
All the time. It's like
yeah.
once you process your own stuff, it gets a little weird when you know someone else did it because you know how people half-ass stuff. Like if you go get fast food, nobody is surprised that that's a gross situation. Everyone knows it.
Yeah.
But when you kind of process your own thing, you're like – jeez, and those people don't care at all. So what are you getting? And that's like you're putting in your body. It just gets weird. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
when I did my 72-hour fast, all I wanted was Burger King. But you know, what are you gonna do?
No, and that don't get me wrong either. I do my when you know when you're on the road, you guys know as well as I do. There's, I mean,
things get weird.
It's almost impossible to take all of your own food and do that. Yeah. But
and you want Culver's?
Not according to the vegans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the I don't want to get political because I'm not political at all. But the epiphany of or the when that all came together to a head, and that because I think very similar to that too was during COVID when you couldn't go out on a boat and fish, but you could still go into a grocery store and buy a piece of salmon that probably came from China or somewhere.
Right.
And they're telling you, you know, they told us that you can't go and take your boat out because they're worried about you touching the same handrails as, you know, the next guy when maybe five people touch that handrail all day, maybe. You know, that's when all of that clicked for me. And it's really like, you know, maybe the fish around here has mercury in it or whatever, you know, but it's not. Like literally says it's coming from China on some of those labels, and I'm just like I'm not eating it. Made that change a while ago and was like I just won't do it, I'll you know, go buy bacon from the dude down the road or whatever instead, you know.
I think the cost to entry argument, this is kind of where I took my mindset on it. When you think about it, how important food was to people 1970s and before, as far as like it was like an everyday thing to hunt, gather, have a farm, manage it, save up money to get this. Like getting meat was important. Sunday dinners were important. It, like food was very important. And as we've gotten away with not knowing where our food comes from, fast forward to now, where we have people that think hunting's bad while they're eating their chicken tenders because they don't know, they have no connection that that was a real chicken. It's like they're so far away from it. So they don't have that tie to it, that food just doesn't become important. Like what they're eating doesn't become important. It's why people are willing to even consider eating lab-grown meat. It's like they don't care, or they'll eat a salmon fillet from China because they just don't quite – they don't understand where it comes from because they don't care, because food really isn't important to people anymore as far as the process of it. And it's weird because at the same time the culture says like going vegan and all these – fancy smoothie shops and the expensive food has skyrocketed, so you think it's more important, but the disconnect has become so great that that's not there. Because it's like, to me, I shoot my first deer, my very first morning hunting, I was somewhat interested in hunting that day when I went, my dad took me the first time, shot a deer, showed me how to gut it, butchered it myself, taught me how to do everything step by step by step, cooked it on the grill, fed it to my mom and sister and my family, and from that point on I was like, oh, I got the connection now, and this matters so much to me, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this. And because of that, it was like it became such a high priority that when money did come in or money appeared, Jeffrey and I, when we were kids growing up, we would split everything. So when we bought our first duck boat, it was $200. I paid $100. He paid $100. Like it became such a priority where that's where all of our free money went to, is because that was what was important to us. And I think it's partly is like when people say, oh, it's too expensive as a hobby, it's like, well – if you're going to snowboard once every other year, then yeah, it's an expensive hobby to get in because it's $1,600 between the board, the boots, the bindings, and the gear and everything like that. No problem. I get why that's an expensive thing. Or you're going to golf once every 4 years. Yeah, you're not going to spend $2,000 on clubs, that sort of thing. But then hunting, it's like you can spend $500 to $1,000 and be really set.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I'm not going to do that. But you could go so often, and that is the meat, and that is how I want to spend my time, like you said, in the outdoors too. So I think part of like saying it's expensive is because you don't value it properly.
And to put it into perspective, it's like every tool we use now to hunt and fish is just it's only a tool that's better than what was used before. Like people originally were using rocks and sticks to kill these things.
Right.
The tools just got easier. So if using a bow from the 80s is still a lot better than anything.
Right.
In history that people have ever had. So it's okay if it might be a little more difficult than the guy who bought a brand new bow.
Right.
And I mean, you really can, if you really wanted to do very, very baseline, you could go find a pump shotgun for around $100 and buy a box of slugs.
Yeah.
And if you are willing to put in a little bit of time, you can still harvest an animal. Like there's a lot of level. That's what I've got. That's what intrigued me so much about hunting. Cause especially when I was a 19-year-old musician trying to make, I didn't have nothing, you know, I didn't have two pennies to rub together, but I was still able to go do it and do the thing that I loved and spend time outside and then bring something home, you know, that really meant, like you said, the connection with the food is another huge part for me, because my dad didn't hunt, he fished and taught me how to fish at least at a basic level. And he instilled some things into me, though, that I still hold on to. And that's, every time I take a deer, I say a prayer and, you know, thank the animal. And, like, people don't get that. And unless you're a super hardcore vegan, which, you know, I can respect that if you have those values for whatever reason.
And you still like us. No, yeah. I'm just
kidding. I have one of my very good friends is, and I respect him a lot for his values. But if you eat meat in any way at all, just go and YouTube a video about how animals are treated in a farm. And it's like you just have zero, absolutely zero argument about people who hunt.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
It's strange to think, too, that if you're willing to eat meat, which most people do, if you're willing to eat meat, but I'm somehow the bad person for getting it myself, it's like there's you clearly are so
disconnected. That's the one that I just
can't.
I want to know where it started, where like the perspective of the factory meat farms was okay, but the act of hunting became evil.
I bet
there had to be a twist.
That'd be a good documentary.
Is it like the sugar thing where like Tyson's being like, no, this is how we should do it? And then
I bet it started when corporate America started really getting huge, because people like America went from this thing about like working hard into just work all the time.
Yep.
I only care about work. Give me the McDonald's. I don't care. I got to get back to work.
Yeah, like, that's true.
I bet when you see that switch happen, that's when people started having less respect for where food came from.
This whole thing makes me want junk food, though. Like the talk about it.
Culver's?
I will say this, and I always make this point because I think it is important. One of the reasons I like to hunt is because I don't necessarily want to partake in the whole factory farming thing. But not all farming is the same.
True.
So that's one point, because my family in Wisconsin, they have meat cows and they have dairy cows, and those animals are treated with respect.
That's absolutely true.
So that's one point. And the second point is, until we can find a better way, I take it easy on I think there's better ways, and I think the people that abuse animals are terrible people. But until we find a way to produce enough, like I it's great to knock a hole in it, and yeah, we should be on the road to trying to figure out a better way as far as replacing factory farming. But until we do, if we eat any of it, then we also can't say much. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, and there's a certain line for sure. I mean, you could say that cramming all those animals in just at baseline is some form of abuse, but there's a difference between that and, you know, some of those videos you see of people just like literally abusing those animals.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. And that was like the final nail in the coffin for me for deciding that
those employees don't really care.
Yeah. 90% of the meat that I consume, I harvested myself.
And yep.
That's a huge reason why, because I saw that, and I'm an animal lover. I love animals, and people don't put, you know, they think if you hunt and stuff that you can't be that person. And that's just totally, totally not true.
I think one of the comments I get a lot of times too, I was talking about turkey hunting and like, man, I hope I can get one this year. And something about turkey hunting too, like it's the only animal that I have in my Rolodex of things that I hunt where I'm like scared I'm not going to get one.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, man, I hope I get a turkey this year. I really hope I get a turkey this year.
Yeah.
Like, and I think too, is like, it's one of my go-to things that I talk about is that 1960, almost all the turkeys in Michigan and a lot of states were almost extinct. So it's like such a blessing we have them that I'm like possessive over getting it now because I'm always scared it's going to go away.
Yeah. I felt that same way. But I just sent you that picture of my mom's backyard.
Yeah.
I think she counted 46 turkeys in her backyard.
Oh.
Yeah, it is crazy. And like, it's Michigan is where please don't everybody go hunt turkeys. I probably shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, jeez, Pete. We'll bleep it.
Yeah, thank you. But it is, you know, what's the point there where the turkeys are, it's insane how many there are. I almost wish that they would, you know, allow to, like some states do, for spring. But I mean, that's not a rock I would die on.
It's okay.
For sure,
Michigan's on top of getting rid of the turkeys. They took away our coyote season for
during
a couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah. While all the chicks are being born, the coyotes can go kill all the little baby turkeys.
There's a lot of those out there too where I hunt. It's crazy. The coyote population there is wild.
It's a wild thing to think that they would close down coyote populations at any given moment. I mean, it's just insane.
At all, period. It is.
The Greenway Outdoors is brought to you by Ram Trucks, built to serve. Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, your adventure starts here. Savage Arms, Nosler Ammunition, Boss Shot Shells, Wilderness Athlete, Fuel for the Rugged, Tracker Boats, Fish the Finest, Eagle Fishing, designed for the savvy angler, Rufus Teague Barbecue Snacks and Spices, Rectech Grills, it's more than a grill, it's a way of life, Sea-Doo, make your own waves, LEM Products, motivating people to hunt, process, and prepare their own food, Quiet Cat, the leader in electronic bikes for hunting, fishing, camping, and exploring. Consistency. That's what you aim for with every practice shot. So when you're out in the field, you get that same consistency every shot. With Carlson's choke tubes, consistency is what you'll get. Our choke tubes are long-lasting, high quality, and made right here in the USA. Carlson's choke tubes, pattern tested, hunter approved. Find out more at choketube.com.
Are you anxious to get going? Knowing that the clock is ticking and time truly is the most precious commodity in the world? Then you, my friend, are in good company.
How are you equipped, or how are you ready for turkey season?
Like, I'm ready to go. You know, what I started using a couple years ago was one of those ghost blinds for turkey hunting because it's so mobile. Mm-hmm. I really fell in love with that like 2 years ago. And I only got into turkey hunting, I think 4 years ago I started trying. It's actually kind of a funny story about the pump shotgun, because I'd never done it before. My buddy gave me his old slate call. I was like, I don't know how to use this thing. I love being in the woods, so I'm going to go sit out there and have my pump shotgun. And I went and sat down and started scratching, and immediately two huge toms ran out. I mean, like, within, like, 5 minutes.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Came charging and no
you
decoys.
You really are a musician.
Dude, no decoys, nothing, no blind. And I, I was like, I cracked one off and missed, and I forgot that I pumped my shotgun once already. So I pumped it twice, and the shell got stuck in there, and they flew away. And I was like, well, now I'm hooked. So after that, I started taking it.
Didn't it hurt more than other animals?
Oh, dude.
It hurts more.
Yeah, and it was just something about the way they charge in, so aggressive, and then, they go down to half the size that they looked, and they're gone. But I just...
Educated, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That I never saw that time again, for sure. But so I got real good at the slate call that year, and then... I got into the diaphragm calls, and I've been really – I think I can do about 6 different calls now, and the only thing that I can't get down – and I keep them in my car right in the seat next to me. I just drive, and I probably look like a lunatic driving down the road making turkey calls, but I'm trying to get that gobble down with the diaphragm call, and man, that is hard. That's the toughest one.
Are you singing gypsy songs
with it? Yeah, I sent him a video of doing Ring of Fire with the mouth
call.
It
was pretty funny.
Doing the trumpet parts.
He's like, I think I'm good. Like, yeah. <You'll be>
No, and I can I got an app, so I can listen to the different calls, the keys and the whines and the
dang.
So I got 5 or 6 down. It's just that gobble that I still can't. Dude, it's with that. If
they
you
can
see
do
those,
that with the thing.
Dude, I'll send you guys a short video of the guy that I've been watching teaching how to do it, but it is like you would never even
know.
You
just gotta shake your head more.
It's insane.
Wow.
That's how I do it.
Yeah.
You gotta get the shaking.
Yeah. So I'm pumped, man. I use the slate call because it's really loud to get them interested, and I always have a mouth call in the past couple years too. So once they start getting close, I'll do some purr clucks and scratch the ground around a little bit, and that seems to get them in pretty close.
What's your recipe plants besides the stock?
So my favorite turkey recipe is piccata. We do that a lot. So you take it's just usually just me and my fiance. So I'll take half a breast and slice it thin, then you pound it out and you can follow pretty much any piccata recipe. It's definitely my favorite.
Is that like a fried thing or?
I
don't know what piccata is.
Yeah, so you guys should give it a try this year. I'll send you the recipe that I like to use. But you pound it out thin, and then you fry it in flour and set them aside, and then you make a sauce with butter, capers, white wine, and every once in a while I'll throw some mushrooms or something in there. And then you cook it down for about 20 minutes, put the fried pieces back in. Cook the sauce down a little, and then we put it over noodles or something
Dang.
Like that.
It's awesome, man.
We take the legs and the wings, and I put them in a crock pot and cook those overnight, and then we pull that apart and make, like, barbecue sandwiches and stuff out of it or soups. I cook it like that. I don't freeze the legs. I just cook them, and then we freeze them after it's cooked. So we can just cut open the package and make whatever.
All right. I guess I'm taking over on this one.
Yeah, let's close
so
her
Kyle,
out.
So Kyle had to go potty really bad. He was about to poop his pants.
No, dysentery.
Yeah, he got dysentery.
Yeah, beaver poop.
He realized at the 5 minutes late that he was supposed to go into a meeting. question I kind of want to ask was, have any of the other guys gotten into this at all in the band?
Joe and Neil, I just don't think they're very interested in it. Steve is always like, rode the line and wanted to try it, and we got him.
Player?
Yeah, yep. We got him out. I hunt a big piece of property, a buddy's property in Richmond. He's got like 100 acres. He's the only dude who can hunt it, and like four or five stands out there. So we took Steve out there. One time we took him out this year, actually, and it was like freezing rain, and he was up in a tree stand with no cover, and just he doesn't have the gear to stay dry, you know. So
one bad experience sometimes is enough to make him not.
Yeah. Well, it was funny, man. I think he's really going to get into it because after that. He was like, dude, I really love that. I was like, if you love that, wait till a nice sunny day when you can sit there and, you know, harvest an animal and get the full effect.
If I'm turkey hunting, I really want it to be the nice, warm spring days because we've done a few that were just the rainy, gross, nasty days.
Yeah.
That's when I hate it.
I've tried those too, and I just have had so little success on the crappy days turkey hunting. It's just like...
Yeah.
Or, you know, if it's raining and you know the sun's going to come out in a couple hours, like right when it stops raining, that's when I love to hit the woods. And then, you know, the sun breaks through those clouds and the gobblers just go crazy.
So do you kind of just stick to deer, turkey, and then fishing?
Yeah, that's pretty much it for me right now. I mean, I went, you know, duck hunting with Kyle the one time and I absolutely loved it. I just don't exactly have the pocketbook to get into that hobby. I feel like that might be a retirement hobby for me.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Duck hunting's kind of like, you want to have the friend that duck hunts. It's kind of like Kyle.
And that's I would be totally content with going a couple times a year with a friend who invites me out duck hunting. But at the same time, I haven't shot a duck yet. Well, I shot one with him. I shouldn't say that, or I think I did. Maybe he shot it. I'm not sure. But we waited all day, and then the one time they flew over, I wasn't, you know, my safety on my gun that I'm used to is in the back. Or rather in the front, and I thought the release for the semi-auto was the safety, so I was trying to bump it the whole time.
Shoot him,
what are you doing?
Panic mode. Yeah.
He grabbed his gun and shot all three and was like, what were you thinking?
I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me upland hunting.
Yeah.
Like you start scrambling, because sometimes you just walk the birds up. You don't know when it's going to happen.
Yep.
And you just, you're scrambling. You know, if it's your gun, you know where that safety is, but sometimes you just slip and you're sitting there, you're pulled up on the bird. You know you could shoot it, but you're just messing the whole thing up.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've always squirrel hunted. That was actually the first hunting, because we always had like little plinker 22s laying around the house, my brothers. So there's a good squirrel population where I hunt, and I do love squirrel hunting, and we had a lot of fun rabbit hunting too. And I took one rabbit with my bow a couple years ago. That was pretty cool. So I like doing that sort of stuff too. But yeah, it's mostly turkey and deer. But, you know, the more I grow and the better I do in business and have money to throw around, I definitely plan.
Yeah.
And moose is definitely the top of the bucket list for me.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, speaking of making more money and going up in life, what's next on the docket for you guys?
Yeah, what's the Gypsy's plans the rest of the year?
Yeah, so we're going to release this 4-song EP on the streaming platforms. It'll kind of be a single at a time. We just got hooked up with a guy who works in radio, which, especially for the Americana scene right now, is actually still a pretty good way to get out on the scene. So,
you guys got a van? You guys do some touring or try and do some outside?
Yeah, we just got a nice new trailer, which was cool. It was kind of a crowdfunding campaign, so thanks to everybody who pitched in on that one. Yeah, it was really great. So we got a nice new trailer finally, which was a big part. And we usually drive around our manager's truck if we're, but we are looking into getting something a little more permanent. We just realized that the touring thing just isn't as lucrative as we would like. So we're
no
really
kidding.
Yeah. You just, I mean, you know, when you got five or six guys on the road, I mean, you guys know all about that.
Yeah.
Driving around and trying to live. And then, you know, when you're trying to break into a new scene, the pay just isn't great. And it's just is what it is. It's the way the industry goes.
Yeah. It's a lot of money out the window. Like just the hidden expenses.
Or not enough money to go around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's really what, if we did well, we would break even, you know? So
I feel like the key would be to get like on a big touring, package with
So that's the goal. So our focus now is to do bigger gigs in Michigan, which we've gotten to like the top tier festival circuit here in Michigan, which has been super great. And then just staying home, and the name of the game, as much as none of us really love it, is creating content and growing your fan base that way.
Cool.
And then once you know, the way social media works now, you guys know too, you can jump on and find where your main demographics are. And we're just trying to build those up along with the help of the radio stations and Spotify. And then once you get, you know, that 300 people who are just dying to see you wherever, mm-hmm. that's when you go and make a weekend out of it and play.
Okay.
Shows.
How do you find that out? Do they just message you like, come to
Indiana? Yeah, we'll put posts up. It's funny you said that because Indiana is our second biggest outside of Michigan. Yeah. You know, you'll go play a festival here and there where you're not going to lose your butt money wise and build a fan following that way. And then just go to those places and you just kind of build it piecemeal like that. And I mean, you can jump right on Facebook and Spotify. There's a really cool Spotify artists platform where you can go on and see where your main listening groups are. So Michigan, Ohio, Indiana are the big ones for us. So we know when we go out to those places, we could do a couple gigs in a row and do okay. So we're just building that throughout the country right now is the goal, and get our stuff out there. And like I said, we're about to drop these four songs here within the next 3 or 4 months, and we already started recording the next four. So
I, over the past couple of years, I've become kind of a guitar gearhead. So, like, when it comes to electric, what's your go-to?
I play an American Strat. Nice. And I just got a GNL Telecaster, which is a super it's a super nice kind of midline price-wise, but the bang for the buck is really incredible. We're working on swapping out those pickups here pretty soon.
Nice. Awesome.
Yep, and I run a Helix for all my effects and stuff like that. It works really
great. Does all
great.
The work for
Man,
you.
Man, it does. And
that is a
the
sweet
way,
piece.
Yeah, the way that those work now and the sounds you can get out of them is
my buddy just got one, and I've been fortunate enough to see how it works, and it's crazy.
What's a
it's
is
incredible.
That the,
it's like the pedal board-esque, but it's basically a computer with every effect, or you can implement, or it knows when to change keys, it knows when to
you can add effects. Oh, you can you know, they'll literally
you can run a whole show on it.
Yeah, and they'll take you know, like the most expensive acoustic ever and record it.
Yep.
And they're called impulse responses, and you get these impulse responses you can buy for like $5 and drag it in. So I'm playing through a Taylor for my acoustic, which will be upgraded very soon, like a 214, which is like really almost bottom of the middle of the line as far as acoustics go, but it sounds like a $3,000 Gibson. Yep. You know.
Oh, that's cool.
And I can swap out, I can plug my electric in right after having my acoustic going and hit a button, and then my whole electric setup's ready to go. So.
Yeah, I've a lot of the shows I've been going to, I focus more on like the rock, punk rock stuff, mm-hmm. and a lot of them aren't even really using amps anymore.
A lot of people don't, and that's
and
what
they're playing the whole set with it. That is crazy.
So we just switched in our practice space to not using amps at all, because it just helps with, because we use in-ear monitors.
Yep.
And the amps were just drowning out the vocal
it's
microphones.
Crazy.
So now it's just, if you had no in-ears on, you would just hear the drums.
Yep.
Yep. So it's amazing. We still use amps on stage. We use shields because there is something about physically moving air. You know, there's just something that sounds, but especially with the classic rock-ish type stuff, Americana that we play. It's nice, but yeah, like we don't mic the amps. It just XLR goes right into the Helix and goes to the front of house.
That's cool.
They don't have to put mics on. You know, it saves so much time. And
yeah, you don't want to piss off the sound guy.
Yeah,
any more than he already is.
They love us when once they figure out that we aren't going to be a pain in the ass, because when we pull up that in-ear rig, a lot of the times they think like,
nice,
oh great, and then we explain it, and it's like, you know, they're done in 5 minutes and just mixing the front of house.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's sweet.
Yeah.
It's cool. All right. So, where should people go look at your
When's
stuff?
The EP, or is there a date for the EP?
So like I said, on the streaming platforms, it's going to kind of be a single at a time. We will be releasing hard copies at like shows and stuff. So if you want a full rundown of the four songs, come out and see us. All of our dates will be posted on socials and our website, thegasolinegypsies.com. But yeah, we're finally, we haven't put out any like really solid, steady new music in a while, and it's going to be coming in hot on Spotify,
Fantastic.
Apple Music, pretty much Google Play, anywhere you can think of downloading
awesome.
Music.
And the History Channel.
The History Channel, that's right. Yeah, and we're
circling back.
Waiting to hear from you guys on the time slot, and we're getting to get that theme song cranked out. I'm so glad you guys liked it, man. I was
Dude,
like
it was
sweating
good.
Bullets.
There was
we're very particular on how a style of a song should be.
I was so
Kyle,
happy.
Not so much, but we are like,
as you should be. Yeah,
got the stamp of approval.
Yeah, that's good. That's
I was really glad it was good when it came through because it would have sucked to be like, oh, I don't know.
And that's what I told him off the bat. Like, dude, if you don't like this, like this is like, because I do the jingle thing too, and I'm totally used to, you know, every once in a while people don't, and that's fine. He was like, yeah, I think this is, you know. And Neil started playing that riff, and I was like, dude, I know what to do with that. And then
he's throw kind of that, mad scientist.
Yeah, throw that little harmonica in there to give it that, you know, that right beat. I feel like that tied it all together.
So yeah, it was good.
I'm stoked about getting in the studio and recording that one for you guys.
Yeah, it was good. All right, well, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on. This was fun.
Yep. Yeah, so I guess I'll do the closer for you guys. Podcasts on Monday. We have them on YouTube, the video podcast, and Carbon TV, also video podcast. And then anywhere you want to listen to it, it's on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, everywhere. And then we have the vlog that comes out on Fridays on YouTube. And then we are posting a crap ton of social media content. So if you want to see all the goofy stuff we do in our spare time and extra nature footage, go check out our social media. And then stay tuned for later this year. We're going back to the History Channel. So
yep, let it ride.
It's going to be a good year.
Sweet. All right.